For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All four line, 60. Big saves out of our goaltender. We made the plays we had to make. We got good traffic on him. Did a hell of a job. Now we got to keep the grind going. Keep it going. Keep it going. Got to stay grounded and we got to keep it going. Got to get ready for Saturday. But hell of a win. Great job.
Hey boys, take care of business. It's nice to see us start dancing again. Cheers.
Get a win, boys. Stay hot.
Yes, stay hot indeed. I love that from Jack Quinn after he had a productive night. His line had a productive night. And Marty, the New York headlines. Remember the other day we had a period that was presented by the letter P with all that physicality leading the way? Well, the New York headlines were all about D. Demolished, drubbed, disaster, dominated, poor defense. Those were among the New York media headlines today, talking about their hometown Rangers after a 6-1 loss to the Sabres.
Well, I'll tell you, another letter P is Peter Laviolette and Michael Pekka and Phil Housley, and not at F, but at P-H-I-L. As a coaching staff, they're not going to be happy. But I watched last night's game, and I watched again some of the highlights, and I'm thinking, yeah, the Rangers didn't play well, but how much of that was the effect of the Sabres starting once again a period or a game with a goal early to push him back a little bit? And then, you know, just putting more and more pressure, especially in the second period. I think the Sabres had a huge impact on making the Rangers look very human in this game, and the Rangers didn't have an answer. So I'm going to go glass half full. Sabres made the Rangers look very average, as opposed to, oh, the Rangers had a bad night. I think it was an impact from their Sabres and the way they played.
Yeah, I don't think I was implying that people weren't giving the Sabres credit. I was reading New York headlines, and those are words that the Sabres did to the Rangers. So I think they're acknowledging that it was Sabre-driven and not Ranger, you know, fully. So I guess the takeaway, since our Sabres green team has been resurrected this week and we talk about sustainability, what now is most likely to carry over again tomorrow when the Sabres take on the Flames? Because we got maybe a little bit of a new wrinkle yesterday in that incredibly balanced second period, unlike anything we've ever seen, to have it all happen that way, a period where at first it was 11 forwards had a point that period. It ended up being 10, but McLeod had already been on the board, and then later in the game, Tuck would get on the board, so all 12 forwards were in on the offense last night, just second time in franchise history. But, you know, if our sustainability poll question earlier in the week focused on, can top line scoring continue? Can offense from the defense continue? Can star goaltending continue? Or is it physicality that must continue? What do you think, what is the takeaway from last night and the thing that is most likely or needs to, or I don't even know how you would phrase this at this point after two games like we've just seen?
So offense from the defense is the first thing that jumps out to me. Obviously, Dahlin getting a second goal of the year on a nice play by Byram. We know that Byram and Power played together for the major part of the start of the season, and then there was an adjustment that put Dahlin with Byram, Power with Jacob Bryson. But so many plays, and offense from the defense could mean a lot of different things. Points and goals, obviously, is one. But I look at the Thompson goal. It's a play from their own zone in the corner that Dennis Gilbert gets the puck off the wall to talk, and then it gets to Peterka, and Clifton is in front of the net to screen the goaltender. That, to me, there's no point for Gilbert. There's no point for Clifton on that play. But there's offense from the defense in the way that they made plays to create that chance. There are so many plays like that throughout the game yesterday that, to me, means that, okay, this group of six defensemen is not one that would stand out as, oh, we're going to get great offense from everywhere on the back end. But little plays like making sure the puck is up the ice, that things are clean on exit, they make a difference. So offense in that sense from the defense for me is one that continued after the Ottawa game into the Rangers game.
And with their production last night that started with the Dahlin opening minute goal, Buffalo ranks fourth across the league in points from defensemen with 35. They rank second in the league in goals by defensemen with 10. They have the most game winners from their defense corps with 3, and they are the only team that has 3 of their defensemen inside the top 20 in defense scoring, which to me was exactly what we were talking about in August. It's like this, if you can get these 3 dudes, Dahlin, Power, Byram, to the 40-point mark, and obviously we have way higher expectations for Dahlin from a total standpoint, but if you get all 3 of them to have that as their low benchmark, it's a game changer. And, you know, if we're going to talk numbers, and why not talk about them now after the last 2 games they've had, maybe the best news I looked at across the league, the Sabres are at 3.36 goals per game now. Mm-hmm. That's 11th. That is, like, perfectly fine, right? It is absolutely fine. Their goals against is tied for 16th, which is also perfectly fine. If they're upper middle or just middle on the goals against, I'm fine with this. If we continue to see the development of the Cousins line and the career years of the McLeod line and the production from the Thompson line.
And scoring 11 goals in the last 2 games, you did not do it while jeopardizing the defensive side of the game. Yes, Luukkonen had to be really good in the early part against the Ottawa Senators. Mm-hmm. And he had a really good first period again last night against the New York Rangers, when the Rangers had some really good chances around the crease where Luukkonen had to be really good. But it wasn't where you jeopardize odd man rushes, where you took chances. The New York Rangers had 0 on-man rushes in the game, 0. Like, that is usually when you say you're taking chances to try to create offense, that's the number one place you're going to notice teams creating offense, is that you're pinching on the wall, you're supporting the offense, but then there's a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 go the other way. And we've seen that a lot for the Sabres over the last couple of years, where, you know, they seem to make one mistake and it turns into a really, really good chance. On-man rushes, you know, the 2-on-1s, the 3-on-1s, the 3-on-2s, there was none. Yeah, Luukkonen had to make a breakaway save in the third period.
How is that not an odd-man rush?
Because it's a breakaway. It's not a non-man rush. I don't know that they... I think they probably considered that to be a 1-on-1 battle.
I get
it. So, you know, when they come in, they probably look at it as a 1-on-1 battle, but it's still...
The Rangers had one more than the Sabres in that situation. That's all I know.
Yeah. Well, the Sabres had 5 more goals, so that's all I care about.
Yeah, exactly.
You're 100% right when you talk about, you know, the offense finding a groove here, being able to push, being able to make plays, and the Dylan Cousins line now in the second game reunited with Benson healthy, and Quinn feeling a little bit better about the puck movement and the puck decisions. Cousins had a beautiful goal. It turns out to be the game-winning goal. Quinn had a beautiful assist to Benson on the power play. Like, those are moments that you have to circle and say, okay, these are things. And the Rangers, I mentioned, played that man-to-man defensive zone coverage, and the defense, Dahlin and Byram and Power, were able to utilize that. Well, Calgary does a little bit of the same, and Montreal on Monday does absolutely the same. So there's 2 teams that the Sabres can continue to do their puck movement in the offensive zone and beating one player and getting great opportunities.
This will surprise you only because of the position you played, and you emphasized again how uncomfortable it is when you're below 900 on the save percentage. But the Sabres team save percentage is now at 896, which is good for 14th in the league.
Yeah.
So they're already in the upper half, and you were hopeful that the numbers were going to look real nice for Luukkonen this morning after these games this week. He's up to 909 with a 2.72. Again, these are very acceptable numbers for where he's at in his career, the contract, the league ranking, and the fact that now he's over 500 personally, which maybe is just like a little springboard opportunity to get some separation there.
909, when it would have been great last year and the year before, when the save percentage average in the league was higher than what it is this year. It's excellent this year. And you talk about it, 896 save percentage for the team right now. There's only like 10 or 11 teams that have a 900 save percentage as a team or better right now. The other 21, 22 teams have basically a below 900, which was always the benchmark. Can we stay at 900 as a team? Can our top guy be at 910, 912 or more? Like we talked about Shesterkin yesterday coming into the game as number one in save percentage. Obviously, that took a drop, right? But you continue to put some good games together for Luukkonen, and the numbers are starting to look better, but it's more than the numbers. It's the presence in the crease, the big timely save. Lindy Ruff put a challenge to many players a week ago. He said, okay, we're doing some good things, but it's not about that right now. It's about raising the standards, raising the expectations, winning games, right? You lose to the Islanders, you lose to Detroit, and you're going to play two really good teams, Ottawa and the Rangers. Raise the standard, win games. We need bigger saves. He's pushed all these buttons, and the Sabres have responded in every aspect of it. I think that's on the players. The players to be able to take ownership and respond too.
You really do have no clue what day of the week it is or how many days have passed. It's only been 4 days since Lindy talked about it. That was Monday. Today is Friday. And I'm not sure Ottawa
is Monday could have been Monday could have been Saturday because we didn't have a show Monday, Saturday, Sunday. When we don't have the shows in those three days, they gathered into one.
They do. And now the jury is out on Ottawa being a good team because they've lost 5 of 7. So I don't know what's up there. But take the wins no matter who you're playing. And you're right. Shesterkin is no longer number one. Oh, man. Connor Hellebuck. Like Connor, the Jets are just Hellebuck. So dialed in right now. 13-1 they are. Hellebuck and company, low shot total against. They were staunch defensively against the Avalanche, an Avalanche team that's lost 4 out of the last 5. The Jets win 1-0, so poor Georgiev, whose goals against is still over 4, has arguably one of his best games of the year, can't get a victory. And by the way, my happy note of the day, because I really enjoy this person so much, Eric Comrie is 3-0 with the Jets this year. And talk about going home, so to speak, and finding comfort in an incredible successful organization year after year, regular season wise. Yes, they need to scale that playoff mountain, but I'm thrilled for Eric to have this comfort. And he won the job, right? Like there was competition and he won the job to be Hellebuck's backup. And that those types of things translate into part of why Winnipeg is where they are right now.
You know what? Eric Comrie was a really good goaltender. It didn't work in Buffalo, multiple reasons. The injury, the three goalies rotation, not enough playing time. But what had to feel good for him in Winnipeg is that when it was Hellebuck, Eric Comrie, and Kaapo Kähkönen, as soon as they saw Comrie take the job as the number two, they waived Kaapo Kähkönen. They said, listen, we have our two guys. We don't need a third guy on the roster. And I'm sure that had to feel good for Eric Comrie, knowing what has happened in Buffalo the last few years, which he responded. But producer Jeff and I were talking off air before the show because he's a goalie dad and he understands. I said, you know what is interesting is that Duffer pointed out Luukkonen being over 500 now after what was a rough start to the year when you look at the win-loss record. Mm-hmm. That's a really, really good step for him to say, hey, I've put October behind, look at November, and let's move forward. Connor Hellebuck would have to lose 9 games in a row to get to 500. That's how dominant Connor Hellebuck has been this year with his record. Like, can you imagine? He'd have to lose 9 in a row to say he's a 500, record goalie.
Yeah, and you know who would almost have to do the same and should be 1A in the Vezina conversation right now, which is absurd and impossible to think? Kevin Lankinen.
With the Vancouver Canucks, yes.
He is 7-0-2 with a 2.08 and a 9.23. Across the board, that is second best, and fifth best in the NHL in the ultimate emergency situation when Thatcher Demko wasn't ready. And there's so much uncertainty. By the way, there's maybe a little more clarity because Demko was on the ice by himself working out in LA as they wrapped up a California sweep last night with a win in regulation over the Kings, first regulation loss at home for the Kings this year. Like Lankinen's story and the buying of time for the inevitable, still not determined when, return of Demko, it is absolutely an enormous story across the league this year. And conversely, and no disrespect to Scott Wedgwood, but it's been a disaster right behind Saros in Nashville this year. Like
Saros has been good when you look at the goal save above expectation.
No run support. Saros is getting 2 runs a game.
Yeah, the record's not there. The run support's not there, and he can't do it all on himself. So this is a problem for Nashville. You mentioned Kevin Lankinen, and there is so few people that know who Kevin Lankinen is, so much so that my good buddy Dennis Bernstein, who covers the LA Kings, when he said the goalie matchup yesterday, he put Lankinen, L-A-N-K-E-N-I-N, instead of K-I-N-E-N. Like, he didn't know how to spell it. And maybe it's just a typo. But as I said that, I was like, you know what? I wonder how many people realize how good Kevin Lankinen was in Nashville, how good he played when he was with Chicago, and Chicago was just a terrible team. And we remember the Kevin Lankinen moment with Tage Thompson on a one-timer, broke his stick, went off the end wall, hit him, and went in. And then he proceeded to smash his sticks into five pieces. But that's because he's a competitor. I've liked Kevin Lankinen, and you're right, it was an emergency signing with Vancouver, and it has made Vancouver better. Eric Comrie has made Connor Hellebuck and Winnipeg better now. And look, the Sabres can't complain because their guy, the guy that they gave the contract to, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, really has been a standout here over the last little bit, which is important for them.
No question. And
Eric, we're showing it on MSG right now, that crazy goal. I still think this is one of the funniest stick broken moment. There's $1,000 worth of stick on the ice at the end of the play because Thompson broke his stick, Lankinen broke his stick, and one of the defensemen, I think it's Seth Jones, broke his stick as well. Or no, it was it was somebody else. But still, there's a lot of broken lumber.
It was a memorable play for sure. It's funny how Tage is involved in these, based on the one he got against Ottawa this week. And
yes,
actually, I meant to circle back on this. By the way, the netminder who has since taken over from Lankinen's unfortunate luck and position of being in Chicago, granted, he's in the NHL. Now, he, when fully healthy, he may end up going back to the AHL. But you know I've been intrigued by Arvid Soderblom from the start,
yes, right?
Like, really interesting character in there, size, ability, and all the rest of it. Again, last night, he gets victimized again. Like, they don't score for him either. Like, it was a ridiculous high number shot of saves. His numbers this year are very good, but he can't win. Like, they just, and I just feel for him, you know? So some guys, unfortunately, find themselves in that spot. But anyway, back to Thompson and
Sabres goal. Did beat him too, right? That was the Sabres' first road win of the season and only road win of the season. They had a second one last night in New York. But
big city winners, Marty. Big city winners.
Yeah, well,
need more games in Houston, LA,
big cities. So yeah.
you said, I think you said it on air, that Thompson could have licked the puck across.
I did say it on air
when he was lying on his face in the Ottawa win, and Tuck took the shot and it went off of his very high upper body while lying down and crossed the line. Yeah. You then off air told me that he could not have licked it across the line. Please elaborate.
Yeah, he wouldn't have counted because you can only purposely propel a puck in the net using your stick. So you cannot grab it with your hand, throw it. You can't headbutt a puck in the net on purpose. And obviously, if that puck had been laying there and Tage Thompson had used his nose to propel it over the ice or his mouth or anything, it wouldn't have counted. It can deflect off your body. And that's why yesterday it was an unfortunate bounce that went over Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen that goes off a Cooley in front of the net. But Connor Clifton is saying, hey, it hit his glove. It can hit your glove. It can hit any part of your body as long as you don't purposely redirect the puck in. You don't bat it in. So that's why I was saying that on the Tage Thompson goal, saying that while he couldn't have used, you know, his nose to push it over the line or, you know, his mouth, because that would have been considered a purpose move to push the puck over the line and wouldn't have been able to do it. But no, I'd rather when Tage Thompson walks down the middle of Broadway and goes high blocker like he has on Shesterkin last night. Those are much better goals.
Well, Thompson is two off the league lead in the race for the Rocket as he is trailing Nikita Kucherov and now Sam Reinhardt in that regard, as Reinhardt joined Ovechkin last night as the two active goal-scoring streak leaders. Mm-hmm. Both have five gamers. Interestingly, both reached the five-game mark by scoring against Nashville on consecutive nights. So the poor Predators. I mean, we joked when we heard that word rebuild earlier in the week. And honestly, like it's probably going to be an unavoidable topic among the, I think, 603 topics I have listed for the Shayna Goldman segment coming up at the bottom of the hour. So talk quickly. You're an expert in that. I can be too. And we'll try to be concise with Shayna when she comes on. But that Predators team
definitely will be, you know how people listen to podcasts and they put it on 2x speed and 3x speed so that they can consume it faster. When we have Shayna on at the bottom of the hour, people are going to have to put it on -2x. Oh. Like they have to slow down the speed because Shayna talks fast and I like to talk fast and we're going to go flying.
That's amazing. Calgary is in. Tomorrow.
Yes.
It's the Sabres and the Flames. Calgary won 4 in a row to start the year, had a rut of 6 games where they won only once, but they've gone 2-1-1 in the last 4 with 2 very respectable and above efforts so far on this trip. Not easy to be down 3-1 in a third period in Boston, regardless of what you think of the Bruins this year. Bruins have now won 3 of 4, thanks to a late overtime winner by Marchand last night against the Flames. But Calgary's 2-1-1 in the last 4. They're 7-5-2 on the year, so 7 up, 7 down, which that's no separation between basically 15 teams in the league that are either 1 up, 1 down, you know what I mean? Like, so this is not a Sabres should be favored by a gazillion matchup. This is why the opening comments of the show were like, what carries forward here and what has to carry forward here against this Calgary team to continue an incredibly impressive week?
Well, if you look at the way the Boston Bruins were able to take advantage of the Calgary Flames a little bit in the game last night, Lindholm scores a blue liner, a defenseman kind of cheating in, being able to get behind. I think that again is going to be the key for the Buffalo Sabres against Calgary, being able to not just rely on your offense and your transition and maybe your rush game, but really spend more time in the offensive zone and use your defenseman, use your high cycle, your net front presence. And that's what Boston was able to do to the Calgary Flames. And look, that's what Montreal also did to the Calgary Flames, but the Flames were able to get a late third period goal and then an early overtime goal to beat the Montreal Canadiens a couple of days ago. So that's the big thing for me is what the Sabres have done against Ottawa, what the Sabres have done against the Rangers is exactly what will work against Calgary and what will work Monday against the Montreal Canadiens. And then you look at the next 8 games and you think, and I know the cliche is going to be one game at a time, one win at a time. I'm looking at the next 8 games right now until Thanksgiving. And I'm like, hey, this is a really big stretch. You and I could be sitting at Thanksgiving dinner talking about the Sabres putting a run and all of a sudden maybe finding themselves 3 or 4 games over 500 where, you know, 4 days ago, they were 3 games below 500 at 4-7-1. Now they work their way to 6-7-1. And you look at, you know, the Canadians, the Flyers, you know, the Sharks, there's really a lot of games in there that have to be wins, and then you continue playing like you are, and maybe you end up being 6-2, 6-1-1 in the next eight. Like, that's the stretch that the Sabres can put together.
Well, I'm not looking ahead. I will stay in the game-by-game mode. You and producer Jeff and anyone on social can do the ladder and do the heavy lifting for me. So it's Buffalo-Calgary tomorrow. We're on the air at 12:30 for pregame coverage. Puck drops just after 1 at KeyBank Center. Amherst are in action tonight. They're finally back home. They've won 5 games in a row, and they're up against the Hartford Wolfpack. Casey Fitzgerald, their leader, with the letter on his sweater. He is third on the team in points, first in assists. He's having a nice year. Hartford has struggled on the road, but are in a good spot overall. The Amherst are still without Noah Ostlund. He is week to week with an upper body injury. Kozak has now been dubbed week to week with a lower body injury, so that's unfortunate. But again, it marries up with the opportunity and timing of having Jiří Kulik come back and Alexander Kisikov stepped in, and both scored on Wednesday in their latest victory over Cleveland. So we'll see if the Amherst can continue their winning ways. And as we documented last night on the pregame, just looking at this last 4-game sample size for this year's first rounder, Konsta Hellenius, it's been incredibly productive. But just this morning, Michael Leone, head coach in Rochester, was talking about the absence of Noah Ostlund, and holy cow, did he have high praise for this young player. Just his attention to every aspect in all areas. Cause like you can look, and there's nice things to look at, all shiny for the Amherst statistically individually right now. And Ostlund wouldn't jump off the page prior to the injury, right? He had 1 goal in 6 games, whatever.
No.
You would have never believed that if you were listening to the Amherst coach today, and it was certainly not about that. So the fact that you've got a slightly older but still incredibly young Ostlund that can be that significant with this team, and a first-year, very, very, very young Hellenius, it's a nice situation to have for Rochester right now.
Yeah, with Konsta Hellenius, you know, the shot is always going to be something. And when we watch, you know, the Sabres draft him this summer, and all the behind-the-scenes approach to what did they like about Konsta Hellenius. They like the skill set. They like the shot. But they love that he's a true center, that he plays a very good game up and down the ice. And he's not afraid. He's a smaller built guy right now, and he's going to fill out. But he's not afraid to take pucks to the middle of the ice. He's not afraid to make plays down low in the defensive zone. So that's what has been impressive in his first year with the Rochester Americans as a young professional, right? We've seen Zach Benson, a young professional. We saw Peterka and Quinn, young professionals. And now we saw Jiří Kulik as a young professional. We're seeing Konsta Hellenius as a young professional, showing a lot of those traits that can make the good players move on and be in the NHL before they really mature physically, because they're ready for it.
Get your hockey fix tonight in Rochester, just for a little consideration of what we've seen lately and what they're likely to roll out again tonight. Jiří being back has him in the middle of the line with Wahlberg and Rosanne. And obviously Rosanne's leading the team in scoring kind of quietly. He's almost a forgotten man somehow, but he's so effective. Nochev with Hellenius and Rusek is another line to keep an eye on. And Sandstrom's going to start again tonight after getting the win on Wednesday, because they're in Wilkes-Barre tomorrow. And of course, that's more of a Hauser territory. So a logical start for Michael, we would assume, tomorrow. Of course, weekend games for Buffalo. Tomorrow, it's Calgary. Monday, it's Military Appreciation Day. And we, our Military Appreciation Game, I should say, as part of Veterans Day. So we want to see you at KeyBank. It's an even earlier start when Montreal comes in on Monday, 12:30 for the puck drop. Help us honor our active and retired service members. Visit sabres.com/tickets to purchase your seats today. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is next on Sabres Live.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is with us because it's Friday. Shayna, I'm told baseball season is over, so you now have 100% attention to hockey, so that's good.
And oh my God, are we throwing fireballs this early? At least my baseball season went this long.
Well, sure.
Yikes.
Yes. Anyway, hi. It's really nice to see you. Marty and producer Jeff are already putting the schedule out there leading up to Thanksgiving and what the Sabres can do in this run of games based on how they're playing. I am reluctant to do stuff like that because I'm living in a day-to-day environment. However, I'm also talking out of both sides of my mouth because earlier today I asked you, hypothetically, like if the scoring doesn't continue for the Sabres, who could you envision them pursuing? Something that's amiss around the league with a scoring type player. Maybe it's someone that makes a fair amount of money, but Buffalo would have the room to bring in. Again, this is not a pressing matter. This is a be ready for the future in case scenario. Any names hit your stat sheet?
Yeah, so the name that was on my mind all summer did not get moved. It was Nikolaj Ehlers, and I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, even though he's a pending UFA, even though I think he would be so good in Buffalo. So I digress. I looked at it two ways. First of all, was pending UFAs on teams who are not going to be in the playoffs. That's where a Ryan Donato comes to mind because I think he adds a little forward versatility. He's a complimentary forward. That's fine. A guy like Gus Nyquist, I think, is a very good complimentary forward as well. He can play with top players and elevate them, and he can do all the dirty work to make plays click. Even someone like Anthony Mantha is interesting to me because I think he's been an up-and-down player, but he adds that hard skill that this lineup could use. But maybe the most interesting name to me was Joel Farabee because the Flyers are terrible. They're bad. There is not much to write home about, but they know they're going to be bad, right? They are doing this for the long haul.
They won last night. They're fine.
Everything's great and wonderful.
They didn't even need Michkov.
Who knew, right? Just keep Farabee in the lineup and bench Michkov. That's going to be it. No, but like, honestly, you look at them and they go, you know they're in this for the long haul. They're going to make the tough decisions. Trading Sean Walker was probably the toughest decision of all last year because they probably would have made the playoffs if they kept him. But they're like, no, we know what we're doing. Farabee is the kind of player you would think they'd want to keep because he's young and he's going to be good in the long term. But I just wonder if they make a big move but could shake something up. Mm-hmm. Maybe that could make sense as like a change of scenery trade.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay, but the question was prefaced by if this offense with the Sabres doesn't keep up, right, to make a move. Do you see this offense staying where they're at right now? I told you at the start of the season, top five offense in the league, right? And we all said, if that happens, it's going to be fantastic here for the Sabres.
We did a breathalyzer after the show that day. We have the results of that. That was a one-off for you.
I would love to get those results, and I'm contesting those results, by the way.
As you should.
But the Cousins line with Quinn and Benson looked better last night. Thompson scored again. You got, Greenway scoring with Zucker. The Krebs line is Lafferty finally scores, but they have a role. Do you see now the way that the lines are with the Sabres being the best look that they've had in a while and it's sustainable moving forward?
No. Okay. There's two ways to look at this. My issue is that second line. Cousins and Quinn have underwhelmed me together. I know, and we know, they can be a lot better together, right? They have a history together. You look at what they did 2 years ago and you go, that was the kid line. That slap, that was going to be the future of the Sabres. And obviously injuries came into play last year and Cousins took a step back. But to open this season together, you're going, okay, the Sabres have that secondary support that they've been missing last year. Here it is. They're healthy. They're in the lineup together. And they did not look good together until last night. So I think there's a chance that they just found that old chemistry, right? And they should get some more time together to cook and see how things go and if they can keep this up. Because if they can, that's a great answer. But but I have a lot of question marks based on that first month of play because they were that bad together, and I think it was dragging down the entire lineup. What's your solution? Maybe you break up other combinations that work, and you ask Paterka to be the driver of that second line because I think he's the spark that they've been missing. I really do like him with Tage Thompson. I think they play great together, but I think the two of them can be separated to drive their own lines and get the top six going as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, change will not be imminent here unless something catastrophic befalls them in the next couple of games, yeah, because they certainly have found a rhythm the last two games. Do you think any potential buyers, suitors, are having remorse for not acting upon a potentially available Marty Natchez this past summer?
Oh, that's where I was going to go, too, and we didn't even talk about that.
Has 18 points during what is now the longest active point streak in the NHL, an 8-gamer after Makar and MacKinnon got whitewashed in Winnipeg last night.
It's the blonde hair. You know what? I'm very big on this. Like, don't be sad, go dye your hair is like my thing. So don't be sad you didn't get traded or that your last season wasn't good. Just dye your hair. I've seen other players do it. I remember Mika Zibanejad came in with the blonde hair and he came in and had a 6-season. Like, this is the trick and more players need to be doing it. It doesn't have to be blonde. But blonde is not a bad move because you have a nice base that you can keep going. Say you're not good as a blonde, you could dye it green right there. So that is the magic of it. But no, I think other teams probably have regrets, but I think we see the genius of Eric Tolsky not jumping, right? Everybody looked at the Canes and went, but he didn't re-sign Guentzel. I'm sure they wanted to. It didn't work out. That happens. But he didn't, you know, move Natchez. He was smart not to. It probably would have been a mistake for them to move Natchez. That we all knew it the whole time. That's why there were so many teams that should have been interested in him. He's a young player who has potential now and in the long term. You just have to get him back on track. He's back on track. The underlying numbers could still be better, especially on a team like Carolina, but the results are there. So there's something to build on. And he's not just doing it playing with their best players, right? Like, he looks really, really, really good on the second line. And you're allowed to split up and put someone like Roslovic on that top line, who's oddly thriving because you have that balance.
This is wild.
Yeah. Joe Burrow has the frosted tips too, and he's having a pretty good year. Maybe the rest of the Cincinnati Bengals need to go blonde to follow up with Joe Burrow. So, but I've seen a lot of, even in the NBA, I've seen a lot of blonde weaved into like the braids and all of that. So it's something, Shayna, you're on right now. The blonde may be making a comeback. You talked about Carolina though. I mean, the Rangers, we saw them last night. They've hit a little bit of a rough patch, and I think Shesterkin has saved a lot of what the Rangers' defensive deficiencies have been this year. New Jersey's hot or cold. Sheldon Keefe was not happy about last night's game, despite the fact they beat Montreal, but did not like their game. Washington is surprising, but is Carolina the better team in the Metropolitan Division?
Yeah, I would say so. I think Carolina is the most complete team, and we're seeing the power of their system, right? We all had questions. How would it look? We know that it works because they have Sebastian Aho as that like anchor up front and Jacob Slavin on the back end. But how would it look when you lose your entire second pair? How does it look when you lose Brett Pesce, who's been a part of the system from what? Day one there, essentially. So all of that roster turnover has worked out for them. Someone like Sean Walker is thriving there. So is Shane Gostisbehere. Pair, I think Allison Lucan the other day was asking, like, what should they be called? I think we settled on Ghost Walker. And they're totally crushing it. It's cute, right? They're a very deep team. The one flaw, I would say, is their goaltending. I want to see more from Kochekov. Like, this is your opportunity. Take it. But they look very complete. Well, you look at the Rangers and you go, you had something going and then you mismatched the defense for no reason. Everything came apart and now it kind of came to a head. Like, Shesterkin can't save you every night. The Devils can't reliably get a save. Still, somehow, they have issues. They look a lot better in front of the net, but it's just not going. And the Capitals, very good 5-on-5 team. I'm working on a story on them now and I'm really like digging into just how good they are. They're real. It's legit. But do I think that they're going to be a top three team in the division? Three, probably more likely a wild card, to be honest. So the Canes are that perennial contender for good reason.
The Canes are being led in goal scoring right now by Jack Roslovic. He has 9 goals already. He is there on a one-year deal for $2.8 million. If you don't know his career numbers or path, you probably, like, there are a lot of people who have been fans of Roslovic for a long time, but it's never really materialized. This could end up being a career year for him, He had, this is crazy. This always stuck with me. I don't know why. He had one bigger offensive year where he topped 20 goals. Did you know that he scored 10 times in the final 10 games of garbage time in that year for Columbus? 10 goals in 10 games to get over the 20 plateau. And I'm like, well, this is ridiculous. And then sure enough, he went back to basically the 11 goal scorer that he is. So I am blown away by this Roslovic start. And one other footnote with the Devils, you mentioned they've won 4 of 5. Simone Nemitz, though, has been sent down. And this is interesting, Marty, because we watched them literally from game one of the season. And the story in game one was Jonathan Kovacevic. And he basically stole that position from Nemitz and from others who were vying for it.
Seamus Casey. Seamus Casey got sent down.
So it's pretty impressive for the Devils and their defense corps to still have that kind of depth. So we'll see. Okay, I've emptied the tank, Marty. Run with it.
Okay, I was just thinking of something, and you made me... Last night, Shayna, Macklin Celebrini scored a goal on Marc-Andre Fleury. Do you know how many years separate the two of them?
Oh, my God.
There's 22 years separation between Celebrini and Marc-Andre Fleury. And obviously, Celebrini played a game, got hurt, but now he's been back, scored a couple of goals. What are we seeing from the number one overall pick this summer in Macklin Celebrini that tells us, you know what, he's going to be a really, really fun player to watch?
I love not just that he's super skilled, right? Like, that's what we all knew about him. He's skilled. He has a ton of talent. He's going to score eye-catching goals. I love how ballsy he is. Like, day one, right? You look at that game against the Blues, and it was technically his first goal. I mean, it looked like it was trying to be a pass, but it was the spinorama attempt. You're doing that in an NHL game on day one. You're doing it. Even the no-look goal last night, I feel like he knows he's good, and he isn't afraid to show it. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it all the more exciting, because in a sport as lame as hockey, sometimes we hear unwritten rules where it's like, you can't do this and you're not allowed to have fun and you should know the ropes before you go do things. And I like that he doesn't abide by that. You shouldn't. And on a team like the Sharks, the defense is going to be terrible. They're not going to be good this year. But if he can be that spark and show, hey, there's a future here, that's exciting. And I think he's doing it already. And then you look at how the team was performing without him in the lineup, surprising offense from guys like Granlund and Toffoli and everyone and more. And you're like, wait, now that he's back in the mix, it just takes everything up a notch. Guys like Zetterlund, you're seeing the potential with as well. Mm-hmm. So it just, if they can have fun and stay in games and just add a little bit of excitement to be a bit of a disruptor, it's a good thing. And I think he's going to be a key part of it.
Yeah, they had a nice little run, winning 4 of 5 and now challenged again. But losing to Minnesota is commonplace in the NHL. The Wild are excellent. 9-2-2, winners of 4 of 5. Matt Boldy leads the NHL in game winners with 4 already this year. They have an awful lot clicking. But it's always more fun to talk about teams that aren't doing well. So very quickly, to wrap up this segment, what is going to happen in Seattle, where they've lost 4 in a row and 7 of 8, and Nashville, where they've lost 3 in a row and 5 out of 6.
I'm going to give Seattle a little more time, because new coaching, it takes a minute, right? And they are not your standardly built team, because they are not top heavy. You want to see the guys be the guys, right? You want to see Matty Beniers break out offensively. And you're seeing Jared McCann look good on the score sheet, and you're seeing Brandon Montour really take this team up a notch. I think he's the source of offense they need from the blue line. It would help to have Vince Dunn back. So I'm going to give them time to figure this out, because I think that there's potential there. They need a little bit more time to cook. The Predators, on the other hand, I am legitimately concerned about, because it's not one or two games. It's not the first couple games of the season. They don't look good at 5-on-5. The new lines aren't clicking. Now you're down a 2C, right? Tommy Novak was going to be a healthy scratch. He got hurt. Colton Sissons comes in, steps up in his place. No, I'm sorry. Luke Evangelista was going to be the healthy scratch, but then Novak got hurt. Then Colton Sissons replaces him. Now he's hurt. Now you have Mark Jankowski playing there, which I think is fine. He can be like a spark plug in the bottom 6, but you don't want him as your 2C. So they are struggling through it. The defense is struggling through it. The goaltending is doing what they can, but they're not perfect either. So they're the biggest concern. They're the ones I'm going, okay, time to start making some tactical adjustments to make this team look like a team instead of just a bunch of new additions thrown into a lineup. It just isn't working there.
No, it's a big challenge. We have to fly. Marty, we got to fly.
Yeah. So. No, I know. I got to get back on the road at some point. We got to fly. Let's go.
Okay. Shayna, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We have a hearing scheduled in the National Hockey League. Player safety did not, and the officials obviously didn't like what Tanner Janot did to Brock Besser last night with an open ice hit that was high, and it felled Besser for the rest of the game. Canucks would rebound thanks to Quinn Hughes and a dominant performance in a victory in L.A., but tough to see Besser in that position, and Janot is now going to have a hearing today for the illegal check to the head, Marty.
Yeah, very late. So it could have been interference as well. Very unnecessary. Could have hit the body. If you want to really make a full body contact, hit the body. He picked the head clean for me. So that was a no-brainer. And I think obviously the Department of Player Safety is going to look at it and put it all together. And this is going to be a suspension. They definitely do not like those type of hits.
Amerks are home tonight. Sabres are home tomorrow afternoon with Calgary coming in. What do you expect?
Don't take Calgary too lightly. They have some players that are, Stephen Huberdeau's playing better. Kadri's there. They've got Rasmus Anderson. They've got some guys that can provide some offense, but the way the Sabres have been playing, don't look so much as to what Calgary does. Look at what has been good for you in those two wins against Ottawa and New York and duplicate that. The same game plan, the same roster, everything the same.
Same lineup? Yeah.
Same lineup, Duffer.
All right.
Same lineup.
We're going to bank on it. We'll see you tomorrow. Enjoy the weekend.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.